So I was on call overnight, and I got a call from the nurses who said, we've got a patient. His name is Robert. He came in with chest pains and shortness of breath, and we've run every test, and his heart is fine, but he does not want to go home. He seems very anxious. He says there's unresolved things, and he's very worried. And the nurses basically said to me, there's nothing medically that we can do. I think he needs you. And I was like, well, no pressure there. In order to understand the story, you got to have a little bit of context for it. And there's two huge pieces of context. One is, as part of the process to become a Unitarian Universalist minister, I had to do a semester of chaplaincy training. And for me, it was in a hospital where I chose to do it where I lived, which was in Orlando, Florida. And the only hospital program that had the training chaplaincy was a Seventh-day Adventist program because it was a Seventh-day Adventist hospital. So you, first of all, just kind of say, if I wanted to stay home, which I did, I had to, as a female minister, was going into a very, and a progressive liberal religion, was going into a very conservative hospital system where the chaplains, paid chaplains, were all Seventh-day Adventists. So that's the first part of the story. The second part of the story that's so important is I was in Orlando, Florida, and I started my chaplaincy on June 13th, 2016. So if you know dates, the Pulse massacre that happened in Orlando, Florida was on Sunday, June 12th, 2016. So this is, you know, this was not just a incidental happening. This was my club for my community. I am a lesbian, was very familiar with the clubs and the shows that were going on down there in my town. And it was a really awful, awful time. So my first day of chaplaincy, I'm walking in and seeing patients when there are people who were victims of the massacre that are in that hospital system. In addition, you've got everyone around the country, around the world, affected by this and kind of looking at how we are treating our LGBTQ folks, similar to the awakening that we're seeing with the death of George Floyd, where it's like, wait, this is wrong. And there was also a real reckoning that was happening with reconciling religion and our treatment of the LGBTQ community. So because there were family members that were not picking up their children's bodies, because that's how their children came out, was to die at Pulse. But their religious beliefs were so strong that there were two bodies that were not even picked up because of the homophobia that had been instilled by religion, you know, and it's really notable to say that it was Latin night at Pulse that night, and most of the people were brown or black, and so it was a very intersectional event, but it was very personal. So, and I walked to chaplaincy, right? And my cohort didn't know that I was a lesbian. My supervisor did, but didn't said anything. I was in shock. I was in grief. My church community had activated. The whole church had turned into a counseling center. We had turned it around immediately, opened it up. Everyone was bringing water. And I was starting in the hospital and seeing patients. So that context is really everything in this story. The story I wanted to tell you is a visit that I had with a gentleman, and we'll call him Robert. That's not his real name. And I've changed some of the details so it's not too too personal, but it's broad enough. And I was about maybe 5 weeks in. Pulse was still there, but it wasn't on the news every day. But it was still very present for folks. And there had already been a lot of conversations of people who wanted to talk to the chaplain because they were watching the news 24/7 and they wanted to reconcile this. And I don't present as gay. And I think there's a lot of people have the assumption that when the chaplain comes into their Seventh-day Adventist hospital room, that they would never occur to them that I was gay. So I was on call overnight, and I got a call from the nurses who said, "We've got a patient. His name is Robert. He came in with chest pains and shortness of breath, and we've run every test, and his heart is fine. But he does not want to go home. He seems very anxious. He says there's unresolved things and he's very worried." And the nurses basically said to me, "There's nothing medically that we can do. I think he needs you." And I was like, well, no pressure there. Like, you know, he's got chest pains and all of this. And he's, you know, like, so come on in, chaplain, and can you fix him? And I was like, all right, sure. Great. Wonderful. Okay. So I walk in and he was probably in his mid-60s, white man, kind eyes. And we started talking and he just needed to get some burdens off of his chest. You know, his wife was sick. There was some money concerns. There was, you know, this and this and this and this. And he just started making a whole list. And I could just see this really heavy weight and anxiety on him. So I ran out to the nurse's station and I immediately went into, in my previous life, I was a brainstorming consultant and I did brainstorming. And I'm like, okay, we need something tangible for this man to let go of. So I ran out to the nurse's station and I asked them for a stack of paper. And I came in and I said, "Robert, okay, we're going to write down each one of these, pull them apart. And then my thought is that we can tear each one and you're going to crumple it up and throw it across the room, you know, or I can take them and I can burn them later." Turn it into a ritual where he could pull them apart and then release them in some way. And he was like, okay, you know, very confused. Women's ritual was probably not the thing that he was used to. He was raised Catholic and I didn't do anything like that in the Catholic Church. So I was like, okay. And then I was like, well, let's write this down. And he's like, well, can you, I don't want to throw them away because I want to share them with my wife later. I'm like, great. Okay. We're just going to make a list. And we got about halfway through the list and we got into his brother-in-law and we got that they had loaned the brother-in-law some money. They had done some things that he wasn't quite sure about, had had some challenges about. And he kept going back to the brother-in-law. And I was like, okay, what's going on there? And they had just recently found out that the brother-in-law was gay. And this man was really not struggling with the fact that they had had money concerns or that there were trust issues. The more that we dug into it, it was that he was gay. And he was disgusted by it. He just couldn't reconcile it. And it was eating him up inside. It was just eating him up. And, you know, I have a little context here where I can say, oh, I recognize this. I know what this is. And I immediately knew that it's like, I was meant to be on call tonight. And I was meant, he came in on the night that I was in call. I didn't have anything else. It was 10 o'clock at night. It's like, let's go here. And in the meantime, he had slowly reached onto my hand. By this point, he was holding my hand and he was squeezing really hard. And I remember it because I had just gotten this brand new engagement ring and I could feel him squeezing my pinky onto the corner of this new ring that it wasn't used to. And it's like there was something there and we kept unpeeling it. And eventually he got to the point where he's like, the act of sex disgusts me and I don't know what to do with that. I was like, okay, great. You've named it. Let's explore that. Where does that come from? And we talked more about religion. And by this point, there had already been tears on both of our points and on both of our sides. And he got to a moment, he's like, I think some of it is, I've just never met a gay person before. I don't think in my life I've ever met anyone who was gay. So then I've got a moment there, right? And the thing that you learn about chaplaincy is it is never about you. Like, it's not about me. I am here as a tool and an instrument to help people reconcile their religious things or their trauma of being in the hospital or the pain. But in that moment, I knew that I had an opportunity to have an aha because this was a man who had already shared some of his deepest things. He had already said, I've never even told my wife these things. He had shared with me things that he had never shared. We had already shed tears together. And he was saying, I've never met anyone gay. And I said, Robert, you actually have. He's like, I just don't think I have. And I held his hand and I said, Robert, I'm gay. And he immediately started crying. But I think, especially in that traumatic summer, I was doubting some of that. Of, you know, how do humans change things when there is so much heartbreak and devastation and hate, and that can just kill 49 people in a nightclub as they're dancing, ironically. Let's bring it back to dancing. And the interaction with Robert made me go, no, it is about interactions with another human being one-on-one. We can change the world by being open and vulnerable and sharing our stories and being open to the possibility that we can impact each other.
Been episode 8 of Bite Sized Blessings, the podcast all about the magic and spirit that surrounds us, if only we open our eyes to it. And whether you choose to listen to our bite sized offerings for that 5 to 10 minutes of freedom in your day, or the longer interviews, we're grateful you're here. I need to thank the Reverend Christine Dance for sharing her story today, as well as the creators of the music used, Sasha End, Alexander Nakarada, and Raphael Crux. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. And remember, that's bite spelled B-Y-T-E. On the website, you can find links to other episodes, as well as to books and music I think will lift and inspire you. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Christine. Be your authentic self, and person by person, change the world.